Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, February 11th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Blood from two unknown males police found at site of the murder of four University of Idaho students in 2022 could help defendant Brian Koberger's defense. And Republican Representative Judy Boyle of Midvale is targeting Idaho school districts with a bill that would ban school districts from using taxpayer money to fund teachers' union activities, including paid time off for teachers' union members to attend to union business. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The blood from two unknown males investigators found at the Moscow home where four University of Idaho students were found stabbed to death may help Brian Koberger's defense. Police in Pennsylvania arrested Koberger on December 30th, 2022 at his parents' house for the killing of the four UI students, which occurred on November 13th, 2022. Authorities extradited Koberger to Idaho, where he is facing the death penalty and set to stand trial for the four murders this summer. A court filing in June said investigators found the blood of an unknown male on a handrail inside the three-story off-campus house and blood from a different unknown male on a glove, which police found just outside the home. Prosecutors said they found DNA from Koberger on a fixed-blade knife sheath they found in the bed of one of the stabbing victims. That DNA, which is not from blood, is expected to be key evidence in the case linking Koberger to the killings. The Idaho Statesman reports that Latah County Prosecutor Bill Thompson said at a hearing on the case in Moscow in August 2023 that investigators did not upload the DNA samples to the FBI's DNA database because the samples were not eligible based on criteria. Koberger's lead defense attorney, Ann Taylor, says police did not disclose the unidentified blood samples when they asked a judge for a warrant for Koberger's arrest in December 2022. Taylor said that omission impacted the judge's determination of probable cause. The judge in the case, Ada County District Judge Stephen Hippler, told Taylor during a hearing last month, the omission does nothing to the determination of probable cause. Hippler said, how does that, even if disclosed, preclude a finding of probable cause when there's a DNA match between the DNA on the sheath and Mr. Koberger? Isn't that probable cause every day and twice on Sunday? Taylor replied, if that's the only thing she's told, I can see why she'd find probable cause, referring to the judge. It's these other things that are withheld that create a context around it. Do we want to have one thing with no context around it when there's this other context that really matters? A grand jury meeting in secret in Moscow unanimously found probable cause to indict Koberger for all four murders. His trial has been moved to Boise. Koberger is now 30 years old. He was a graduate student working on his doctorate in criminal justice at Washington State University in Pullman at the time of the murders. The deceased UI students were 21-year-old Kaylee Gonsalves of Rathdrum, 21-year-old Madison Mogan of Coeur d'Alene, 20-year-old Zaina Kernodal of Post Falls, and 20-year-old Ethan Chapin of Mount Vernon, Washington. The Idaho House State Affairs Committee advanced a union-busting bill targeting the Idaho Education Association yesterday. The Idaho Education Association is the state's teachers' union. House Bill 98 would take away teachers' union members' right to pay their union dues through an automated payroll deduction system with the school district that they work for and would fine school districts up to $2,500 for helping union members in that way. House Bill 98 from Republican Representative Judy Boyle of Midvale would also forbid school districts from using taxpayer resources for teachers' union programs, which would prevent districts from giving union representatives paid time off for union duties. Here's Boyle speaking to the House State Affairs Committee on Monday.
Today we have 115 traditional schools, public schools. The charter schools are not allowed to collective bargain, so we're not talking about charters at all. There are 83 of those 115 with unions. 50 of them allow union activity using taxpayer dollars. There are some school districts that do allow in their contract for their union president to take full time off just to do union activities, yet are still paid by the school district. Now, the union does have payroll deduction on their website, and they are, at least they've told me, they are trying to get all their members to use that instead of having the school district directly take the money out of their wages. So that would help. That would be a good thing. And this bill would prevent them from continuing to use the school district for that activity. There are exceptions to this. So if there is a negotiated agreement for time off without pay and benefits, that's allowed. Teachers could take personal leave to do union activities. Or the union could reimburse the district for any funds that are spent.
That was Republican Representative Judy Boyle of Midvale. Chris Perry with the Idaho Education Association testified against the bill Monday.
This legislation has nothing to do with saving taxpayer funds. The IEA receives no taxpayer funds, and the majority of our members are Republicans who I think would be incensed if we did. Instead, it attacks educators' rights and workplaces, will lead to more teachers leaving the profession, and hurts students. The study that the page is passing out right now shows that collaboration between a teacher's union and the district can improve student performance by 12.5%. and has a massive impact on teacher turnover in low-income districts. This legislation strikes at the heart of that collaboration, attempting to punish school districts for building collaborative relationships with their teachers' unions. The erosion of that collaboration will hurt students and will exacerbate teacher turnover in districts that can least afford that turnover. Idahoans get the best bang for their buck of just about any state in the country. Our educators outperform educators in similarly funded and similarly sized states. A huge contributor to that, I think, is our culture of partnerships with our administrators, boards, and teachers' unions. No other teachers' union in the country collaborates so closely with their boards and administrators and parents to deliver for students. This bill does not save taxpayer funding. It wastes taxpayer funds, undermines local control, hurts teachers, and hurts students. Please vote it down.
Thank you, Chris. Are there questions today for Chris? Representative Achilles.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Perry, there's a number that's been floating around, excuse me, that we've all heard, which is the Idaho Education Association received $1.8 million of taxpayer funds. Could you just clarify for us what's really going on with that?
Sure. So that was an error on our tax filing, a formatting error. We all love Adobe Acrobat and navigating that system, but it just knocked the amount down a couple lines. We received no government funds, no taxpayer funds, and that was just misaligned. So we fixed that on our tax filings.
Any further questions? So, Chris, if you haven't received any funds, and I believe your statement there, then why are you concerned about the bill where you can't receive?
Sure.
Funds.
So it's the, I guess I would call it like a speculative valuation of teacher activities here. So we aren't talking about like, hey, here's $100 that's supposed to go to your teacher's union. This is more about my communication as a union member with a district is suddenly attached to a dollar number that the union, as you can kind of see in the bill, the union then has to reimburse the district for specific, well, not really that specific, pretty vague activities that are kind of normal processes within school districts. So things like filing a grievance or working on workplace issues If the person that the district is talking to is a union member, then suddenly it triggers this legislation. So I think that the way that we're defining taxpayer funds here kind of opens up some real kind of wild issues. And that's where the kind of rub is, I think. If we wanted to work on a bill that like actually prevented like a, you know, taxpayer funding going to us, which doesn't happen, as you mentioned, I think we'd be happy to work on that. And we can work on clarifying the use of taxpayer funds in school districts with you guys collaboratively.
Okay. Any further questions for Chris? Representative Hostetler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Chris. Does this directly affect any ability to communicate with your teachers in any way? Or provide services for them in any way?
Chris?
Chairman Crane, Representative Hostetler, it does. So there's, what is it? Page 1, line 39, subsection E. Distributing communications or membership solicitations on behalf of the teachers' union or its affiliates. So the way that, and we are kind of small C conservative in the way we interpret laws like this. We want to be well within the legal boundaries here. Distributing communications could be, in our interpretation, if the district is paying for a bulletin board and the union posts an event, let's say a professional development or charitable event that we put on, suddenly is the district on the hook for that distribution of communications? Or if the district posts on a shared calendar with educators, non-member or member, and it's a union event, is that suddenly a distribution of communications that would fall in violation of this bill? So it does hamper, I think, the administrators and the district's abilities to communicate en masse with educators about specific opportunities to their profession.
That was Chris Perry with the Idaho Education Association testifying against Boyle's bill. Idaho Education Association Executive Director Paul Stark was also on hand for Monday's hearing. Stark said Representative Boyle's bill is likely unconstitutional because of viewpoint discrimination.
Let's not make any mistake. This is the Idaho Education Association bill, and it is dangerous precedent to have bills that single out and target one Idaho business, and that's what this does. We don't see any other businesses affected in this bill. We don't see any other unions in this bill, only the Idaho Education Association. As Representative Boyle herself just said, it has nothing to do with firefighters or police. This is the only entity. And this is dangerous precedent to go after one business in this fashion. It's also, there's a large issue here with what's called viewpoint discrimination under the Constitution. This legislation appears, again, to target only the Idaho Education Association because it doesn't approve of its viewpoints. If you look on page 4, line 47, as has been already noted, it talks about political speech. And there is in this bill apparently some prohibition on this. Viewpoint discrimination, as I said, is unconstitutional. We don't see any other unions, public sector, private, otherwise, in this bill. It's also bad precedents, again, to shut down one particular viewpoint. Lastly, as has been noted on page 1, line 27 through 29, this legislation makes it illegal for educator pay to be used for dues. It limits what they can choose to do with their own paycheck, or worse, it prohibits pay increases if an educator chooses to belong to the Idaho Education Association. After the many good things this legislature has done to help public schools, help retain teachers in recent years, now is not the time to pass this kind of harmful and unconstitutional legislation. Thank you, Chairman. I stand for questions.
Thank you, Paul. Are there questions for Paul? Representative Achilles, followed by Representative Mickelson.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stark, so are there other payroll deductions for other groups offered by school districts?
Mr. Stark. Chairman Crane and Representative Achilles, yes, there are. There are all kinds of payroll deductions. It's really what the employer chooses. It could be things like, as has been noted, health savings accounts. Most school districts do have a foundation, which is kind of a charitable thing that helps the school districts. Those kind of things can be deducted. As we've said, 401ks, again, a private business, you can have those deducted from your payroll. United Way, Red Cross, et cetera. But it varies, yes, but there are other payroll deductions.
Representative Mickelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me what kind of things does the union do or provide for communities as far as resources for teachers and the value that they bring maybe through their training just a little bit?
Mr. Stark.
Thank you, Chairman Crane, Representative Mickelson. There's a plethora of things. I could go on for an hour talking about these wonderful things. There's something that called the Idaho Children or the Children's Fund. And that is a charitable organization that is has been created by the IEA to help kids when they don't have backpacks, maybe they don't have shoes. There's a lot of eye exams that are given and dental exams and things like that. There's a lot of professional development that happens as well, helping our educators to become the best they can possibly be. Dyslexia training is one of those that this legislature passed, making that mandatory, and that's something else that will happen. There's also a lot of just community events, community outreach, and involving members of the community, parents and business owners and the like, in community events that the association is a part of.
That was Idaho Education Association Executive Director Paul Stark speaking in the House State Affairs Committee yesterday. Republican Representative Clint Hostetler of Twin Falls tipped off the public that the bill is ideologically motivated when he told the committee teachers unions, quote, overwhelmingly have contributed to the Democratic Party. Hostetler said, as Idahoans, we realize that there's a larger issue here, and I believe that it's relevant to our people who may or may not agree with the ideologies. The committee advanced the bill to the House floor with two Democrats on the committee, plus Republican Representative Sean Dygert of Melba voting against. Dygert said the bill would override, quote, an elected school board position that is entrusted with the ability of regulating and taking care of these things. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
This program is made possible by KRFP members and the Palouse Peace Coalition. Palouse Peace Coalition is a consistent presence for peace since 2001. The Palouse Peace Coalition shares KRFP's progressive values and hosts a weekly peace vigil Fridays from 3 to 4 p.m. in Moscow's Friendship Square.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to KRFP.org and click Support KRFP.
Saturdays at 5:30 p.m.
But I like to shoot small game. Ducks, rabbits, squirrels, especially ducks.
Meet Ducks and Pipes.
Well, that's where you got the name, Ducks.
How did you receive the name Pipes?
My business, installing background music.
Ducks and Pipes are two characters in the 11-part ZBS radio play Saratoga Springs, a radio play where the sounds come alive.
I'm replacing everything with small animals.
Saratoga Springs in all its stereophonic glory.
You're gonna have stuffed ducks.
Oh, yes, of course.
Ducks and Pipes live in a world where modern sound design is of the utmost importance.
Pipes, I want to create an environment for our banking clientele that reflects the feeling of the Adirondacks. The bubbling brooks, the wind in the pines, the dry leaves of autumn rustling in the birches.
The mist rising off the lake.
Chirping birds.
Honking of geese.
Katydid.
Call of the loon.
And music.
Yeah, with music.
Saratoga Springs, an 11-part radio adventure from ZBS, debuts Saturday, February 15th at 5:30 p.m. Another amazing cultural offering from the station that builds community.
The House State Affairs Committee introduced a bill from a Democrat yesterday. Representative Todd Achilles of Boise introduced a renter's rights bill, which would prevent landlords from colluding to increase rents in a rental market.
This RS in front of you is intended to fix a growing problem in markets where companies are sharing data and using that data to price fix. You know, I think what I've written in this RS is to address this growing problem that looks like kind of a hub and spoke. So you have competitors, which are the spokes. The competitors have their confidential information. They're not sharing their confidential information with other competitors, but they're sharing them with somebody at the hub, a third party, a service provider at the hub. And what that allows the service provider at the hub to do is to basically throw all that private data into an algorithm and use that to fix prices in a market. And where this is happening and where the urgency is actually in the rental housing market. So when I've been out door knocking, and I've got a lot of apartment buildings in my district, I hear again and again these stories of, you know, my rent went up $100 last year, it just went up another $100. But you hear the same stories in different buildings in different part of the parts of the district. And there's clear, you know, felt like there's some coordination going on there. So as I did some more research on this, there's actually a big issue going on. So in other states, Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and a couple of others, you have attorney generals going after these algorithmic price fixing schemes in the rental housing market. And what's interesting is a lot of those landlords in those complaints operate units here. And the biggest issue is in the Boise market and in the Coeur d'Alene market. That's where we see the rents going up the fastest. So what this legislation will do is to basically clarify that this technique of sharing private data with a third party and then acting on those pricing recommendations is illegal. And it's just another way of price fixing. It's really no different than folks sitting in a room and exchanging pricing like the good old days.
That was Democratic Representative Todd Achilles of Boise. The House State Affairs Committee voted to introduce the bill and assign it a number, and there will be a hearing held on it in the coming days. U.S. District Judge Angel Kelly has issued a temporary restraining order against the Trump administration's decision to drastically cut medical research funding nationwide. Washington had joined 21 states in one of the first major pushbacks against the dismantling of the federal government, the lawsuit against the National Institute of Health. The lawsuit came after new Trump administration officials announced Friday they would cap reimbursements for health research nationwide at 15% instead of higher amounts they currently pay out, averaging around 28%. The cuts are likely to negatively impact all sorts of health research around the country. The lawsuit, led by the attorneys general of Massachusetts, Illinois, and Michigan, alleges the Trump administration's National Institute of Health is currently violating the Administrative Procedures Act, which prevents agencies from mandating categorical and indiscriminate changes to indirect cost payments. According to the Spokesman Review, Washington Attorney General Nick Brown said, "President Trump is trying to do the same thing he tried during his first term, and the administration must know it is illegal. NIH provides life-saving medical, agricultural, and public health research the people of Washington depend on. This attempt to curtail scientific research could have long-lasting impacts for generations to come." The lawsuit states Washington State University could lose $5 million in research reimbursement payments this year if the changes hold. According to the lawsuit, the National Institute for Health reimburses WSU 53% of the cost of on-campus research and 26% of the cost of off-campus research. The National Institute of Health's order notes large foundations cap their indirect costs on their grants at 10 and 12%. The NIH says since the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation caps indirect costs at 12% and the Gates Foundation caps theirs at 10%, then a 15% cap is reasonable for the NIH. The new Trump NIH policy says this rate will allow grant recipients a reasonable and realistic recovery of indirect costs while helping NIH ensure that grant funds are, to the maximum extent possible, spent on furthering its mission. The lawsuit says the cuts would, quote, send shockwaves throughout WSU and could result in closing WSU research facilities and limiting research at other facilities. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson, who until last month was Attorney General, said Washington is a leader in cutting-edge scientific research. If the Trump administration's unlawful action is allowed to go forward, it would be disastrous for the important work happening at our research institutions. I will work with our attorney general and experts at our universities to ensure these dollars are protected from unlawful federal overreach. In his first month as attorney general, Nick Brown has himself brought or joined three other lawsuits against the Trump administration. Brown filed lawsuits in federal court last month to block Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship, even though it's part of the U.S. Constitution, and joined other states in a lawsuit when the White House said it was freezing federal funding grants. Trump rescinded the latter order, but some recipients have found their payments have not happened. Brown also joined Minnesota and Oregon last week in their lawsuit to prevent Trump from blocking funding to medical institutions that provide needed gender-affirming care to people who are 18 or younger.
As a doctor, I've seen too many women with breast cancer who could have avoided extensive treatment or even death had they just gotten an annual mammogram. Every major medical organization experienced in breast cancer recommends annual mammograms for women 40 and older. Please, if you're 40 or older, get a mammogram every year. If you have a family history or other risk factors, talk to your doctor about what's right for you. To find an accredited center, visit mammographysaveslives.org.
About 200 people rallied in front of Spokane City Hall last night in support of Immigrant Neighbors and Friends. The nonprofit Latinos in Spokane organized the rally after the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Border Patrol took away several people and accosted others in their efforts to help Trump keep his unattainable campaign promise to deport 15 to 20 million immigrants. The group then squeezed into last night's Spokane City Council meeting to urge the city to allocate money for legal and immigration services for affected families and for required training for city employees on how to implement and comply with the Keep Washington Working Act, which prohibits local and state police, school resource officers, and Department of Corrections from collecting immigration status information, detaining Washingtonians to determine their immigration status, or contracting with federal immigration agencies to detain immigrants. During the rally, Latinos in Spokane Community Programs Director Amy Deras said, "We're here to break down systematic barriers faced by immigrants and refugees and to build a fair and safe community for everyone. We all belong in Spokane." The spokesman review quoted one speaker at the rally, Okisise Mato, who goes by the name War Bear, who said, "Last night, a very close first friend of mine, who does a lot of advocacy work for our peoples, was detained by ICE. I have to carry around my tribal enrollment papers in my pocket at all times so I don't get harassed by racist ICE. That is the reality for indigenous peoples right now." War Bear said immigration officials detained his friend Saturday night, even though she showed the enforcement officers her tribal papers. War Bear, who is part Pueblo, Lakota, and European, seemed to be referring to the fact that most immigrants and migrant workers who come across the southern border are descendants of the indigenous people of North America who once populated this continent on both sides of what was to become the United States-Mexico border. Asians for Collective Liberation in Spokane organizer Tina Mawa said, "Spokane has become home to countless immigrant and refugee families who contribute to the vibrancy of our community, our neighbors, our teachers, our caretakers, our essential workers. They run businesses and they build the future of this city with their dreams. They are not other, they are us." The Keep Washington Working Act of 2019 essentially makes Washington a sanctuary state because a person's immigration status is not a matter for police or school resource officers, many of whom are overworked anyway. Because of the Keep Washington Working Act, when ICE does detain people in Spokane, they are likely to bring them to the Kootenai County Jail across the state line in Idaho. Kootenai County Sheriff Lieutenant Jeff Howard told the Inlander his department's contract with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement reimburses the Kootenai County Jail $112 per day for detainees ICE picks up in Spokane or Kootenai County. Howard said the Sheriff's Department has, quote, "an excellent working relationship with ICE to remove criminal aliens from our county," unquote. ICE eventually moves most of the detainees to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, which is run by the private prison firm, the Geo Group, on behalf of ICE. The Inlander reports as of January 31st, the Kootenai County Jail was holding 33 people for the U.S. Border Patrol, including 23 people who arrived after January 20th when Trump started signing his executive orders. Referring to the crowd of 200 people at the rally at Spokane City Hall last night, Amy Deras said, "This is what makes us Spokane, each and every one of us. This is what unity is. We are standing shoulder to shoulder, not just as individuals, but as a powerful force for change. We're here today because we share a common purpose, our purpose, a shared vision, and an unbreakable commitment to justice."
A January survey of Montanans shows a large majority support workers' rights, even as several bills that could impact them move through the state legislature. The bipartisan firm RABA Research asked roughly 500 Montanans their thoughts on labor and found that 72% think that unions help rather than hurt Montana's economy. John Davis is a partner at the firm and says that support was even stronger across more specific questions.
When we had asked a question about changing laws that would weaken employment protections, so examples being safe work environments, wages, benefits, 80% of respondents said they do not support efforts to reduce those protections.
91% said that Montana's workers should be able to join a union if they choose to, and 87% said they'd be less likely to support a legislator that voted to weaken workers' rights. The survey also found that most respondents weren't aware that lawmakers are currently considering legislation around allowing highly automated driverless vehicles to operate on public roads in Montana.
Driving is a major function of a significant percent of the American workforce. So if that were to change, this would have a direct impact on people's livelihoods.
76% of respondents said they wouldn't be comfortable sharing the road with driverless delivery vans. Montana AFL-CIO is a federation of Montana unions, and Executive Secretary Jason Small says the status of union rights is an indicator of all workers' rights in the state.
When the unions are in there protecting workers' rights, it's not just the unions themselves they're protecting. We are the gold standard, and we set the wages and the packages for everybody else. So if we start to flail, the rest of the workers also begins failing.
I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, the National Weather Service has issued a cold weather advisory for the Washington and Idaho Palouse and the Spokane and Coeur d'Alene areas. It's in effect until noon tomorrow. Very cold temperatures can lead to hypothermia with prolonged exposure. The temperatures ranging from 3 to 13 below zero. Use caution while traveling outside. Wear appropriate clothing, hat, and gloves. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area is calling for partly cloudy tonight, low 7 below zero. Patchy freezing fog after 10 p.m. Sunny tomorrow, high 18. Wind chill values as low as 15 below zero. Southeast winds around 6. Mostly clear Wednesday night, low 2. Wind chill values as low as 11 below zero. East wind 6 to 10 miles per hour. On Thursday, 80% chance of snow, mainly after 4 p.m. High 28. Wind chill values as low as 10 below zero. East winds around 10 miles per hour. New snow accumulation less than half an inch. Thursday night, 80% chance of snow, low 23. New snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches possible. And on Friday, 90% chance of snow, new snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches possible. And the current temperature is 1 degree. If you want to help KRFB keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. And an announcement about the Palouse Cult Film Revival movie tonight, The People Under the Stairs, which is at 7 o'clock at the Kenworthy. $2 from each admission will go towards KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is up next. Under Construction in its new time starts at 7:30 tonight. And music begins in earnest with the Brent Bent Show at 9:30 p.m. as well. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.